Well, we made it to the middle of the week, didn't we? I mean, today is, let me just double check. Yes, it's Wednesday, April 15th. I might call your attention, Mr. Parsons, to the top of our rundown today and don't get caught like I almost did. We're underway, and it is Wednesday, and we, as much as we'd like to avoid it being April 15th, we cannot. And April 15th, it's not a great date because we know it is, well, it's the day taxes are due, or our tax forms at least are due. And I suspect we're supposed to celebrate that we're lucky enough to live in America and pay taxes. Okay, I feel lucky enough to live in America and pay taxes, but I would feel just as lucky if I didn't pay as much in taxes.
I'd feel luckier, actually.
Would you feel luckier? And the whole idea is, wouldn't it be nice to look at your paycheck and see the gross amount and that the net amount would become much closer to the gross amount, because the net amount is actually gross if you think about it.
Yeah, you're right.
It's just the truth. So meanwhile, our good friend Judge Fred Mester, God bless him, sent along a few other things that have happened on April 15th. I referred to it yesterday, but this is the day the Titanic sunk, the 15th of April. I did not remember this is when Abe Lincoln died.
Wow. We should move tax day, because April 15th doesn't seem very lucky.
Not a lucky day. And I did not remember that the Boston Marathon bombing happened on April 15th. You remember that? I don't remember that.
No, it's.
Does that mean the Boston Marathon is on today and I haven't heard a thing about it?
That I don't know, but that's very spooky that all these bad things happen on April 15th.
Very spooky. Spooky. If I were still a disc jockey, which is how we all started in radio many years ago, I would have opened the show with the Beatles and Taxman.
Oh, yes.
That's just the way it was. But that was so long ago, and now there are so many new fees you have to pay, and we're a talk station, not a music station, blah, 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 blah. Here's all I know. We're still free. We still come to you in your home, your car, wherever we are together, and we come free. We just come to you in a lot of new ways, like streaming from anywhere in the world. We're coming back, if you can't be here, noon to 2, and podcasting Focus with Paul W. Smith at WJR.com. And I do hope you have the free WJR app, because that's an app that can open lots of doors for you. By the way, Facebook and YouTube pages are live streaming right now. That's something we started recently. Join the people who like to tune in and watch. And we are thrilled to come on board right after you've had your daily dose of Dietz, All Talk with Kevin Dietz. And we pave the runway for JR Afternoon with Ryan Ermoney. But speaking of paving, the pavement's getting ready for the Detroit GP. I mean the fabulous Chevrolet Detroit Grand Prix presented by Lear. And if you go to DetroitGP.com, you can buy your grandstand seats now for that May 29th through the 31st extravaganza, the Chevrolet Detroit Grand Prix presented by Lear. It's an event now that people count on and come from around the country, if not the world, to participate in.
Sneaking up on us.
You sent me a real wow story today. We never had a chance to meet this person, talk to this person, welcome this person, wish this person good luck. And now he is not going to be taking the coveted job he was excited to have. Leaving Syracuse University, which is a great university, our University of Michigan president-elect has discovered and announced that doctors have discovered brain cancer in his brain. And so Kent Siverud, and I'm not sure I'm pronouncing it correctly, but Kent Siverud, who was the U of M president-elect, was about to be basically sworn in soon, has stepped down already. And what a story.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, talk about life's unfortunate timing. You get this great job at one of the most prestigious universities, and then you get hit with this health diagnosis. Now, from what I understand, Mark Bernstein, of course, we know him from the Bernstein's commercials, but he's on the Board of Regents at Michigan.
Oh, yeah. He's a big deal regent. Yeah, has been for a long time.
He put out a video, and he said that, obviously, Mr. Siverud is being treated at the University of Michigan, and then he is going to stay on as a law professor. So he's going to still be involved at the University of Michigan in a reduced capacity so that he can focus on the cancer fight.
Oh, well, that is excellent that they've taken him under their wing as part of the family.
Yeah, it's very classy.
Yeah, is Mark available to talk on the radio, or did he already do that? Or
he put out a video, and that's where we're being directed.
Okay, well, yeah. I have his number. I'll call him when I'm not on the air, and see if he, you know, I'm not sure what he wants to say. Obviously, and maybe that's all there is to say, that he is going to still be there as a law professor, and treated at one of the finest hospitals in the world,
right?
The University of Michigan Medical Center.
So now, interim president, I'm going to mess up his name.
Well, his name is a tough one too, but yeah. he remains interim president, I guess.
Yeah, Domenico Grasso. He'll remain interim president until they find somebody else. So I don't know if he's just going to stay there permanently. I'm guessing if he wanted to stay there permanently, he would have. But yeah, man, I mean, just talk about really, really unfortunate timing. But you know what? Maybe it was good timing, because University of Michigan Health System, they're world renowned for fighting cancer. So maybe he was put there so that he would get the absolute best care with such a diagnosis.
Well, that's a very good, positive viewpoint. Are you one of those guys that believes things always happen for a reason?
I wouldn't say I believe it, but I also won't rule it out. Talk about a political answer.
Okay. What are you running for goodness sakes?
Believe
me, you don't want to get into politics these days.
Anything I could work the least and get a lifetime pension, whatever that office is.
Oh, don't even get me started. Oh, I got to tell you something. I can't believe you just mentioned that. Now I got to dig through. Without knocking over my my coffee and everything else, you're not going to believe this. This slug.
Swalwell?
Swinewell.
Yeah.
This slug.
Well, if you can't find it, Paul, we are talking to Caitlin Buss about it coming up next. So.
Well, I'm just going to say this. Do you know this SOB still stands to get his pension?
Wow.
He leaves in disgrace. But at the moment, at least, he still gets his pension.
You know, I wonder if that's...
Which we are paying for, by the way.
Yeah. You know, I wonder if that goes for, like, George Santos and, you know, all these other people. The other guy, the other guy who just...
There are too many of them.
Yeah.
There's a Democrat, a Republican. They want to spread it out as best they can.
Right.
It's just too much. It is. There's no other way to put it. It's too much. And that's a good question. Do they all get to keep their pension? I hate to say it's an excellent question. It's a sickening question, but it is one that needs to be discussed. And then there'll be people who, I know there'll be people who have an argument on both sides. And I can't even understand the argument on the other side, which is why we'd have to listen, I guess. Anyway, let's pretend we hear in the background the Beatles and Taxman. As we go to our break underway on this Wednesday, April 15th, it's Focus with Paul W. Smith on WJR. Thank you, Chris. We'll be sure to wake up with you tomorrow. And for that matter, every day, JR Morning, worth spending time with when you don't have a lot of time. That's especially because you know they're not going to waste your time. All right. Hitting the ground running, we always love to with our next guest, our first guest of the afternoon. Caitlin Buss is the deputy editorial page editor of the great award-winning The Detroit News. And by the way, she and her husband, Kelly Cobb, will be hosting Focus this coming Tuesday for me. And so I thank you in advance for that, Caitlin. I appreciate your help because you always do a nice job with your hubby.
Hey, thank you. Well, we're looking forward to it. We always have a lot of fun doing it, so appreciate the opportunity.
What a slimy time we are going through finding out about all these people, these predators, these monsters. But I just got other worse news. Well, I don't know if it's not worse news. It's just added to the bad news of Eric Swinewell. And that's what I call him. He will still be eligible unless they make changes to get his pension. We pay for that, of course. And that is members of Congress are eligible for a pension at age 62 if they've attained 5 years of service. And Swinewell was first elected to the House in 2012. Doesn't matter if you get fired, like you don't get reelected, or you quit, or whatever it is. It does not affect their ability if they put in the 5 years to get their pension.
I think there's a lot of members of Congress we would prefer to withhold pensions from. But, no, I mean, look, this just points to how important these offices are. And I think, you know, not just with Swalwell, although he really is a extreme example, but you have examples on the Republican side as well of the low character of a lot of the members of Congress right now. I mean, to the point where when people are running for office, I look at them and I say, why would you want to go join that group of people? And Congress is not often popular. It gets a lot of flack, but I think this just points to the corrupting power and ambition. And that's a lot of the people we've elected. And so Americans need to take a really hard look in these elections at who they're putting in the office that we pay for and fund for the rest of their lives. And they're deciding how our money is getting spent.
There's no better way to put it than the way you just put it, Caitlin Buss. And as I fear, there'll be more and more the people coming out and getting courage to speak up against Eric Swinewell. There's a lot of talk about the politics behind this. I don't know what to make of that. What do you make of that? There are people saying, most notably on Fox News, well, this was a long time in coming. This was a plan. They all knew about this, but they are using it now because they didn't want him to be their governor of California. I don't know if I buy any of that, but I don't know. What do you say?
Well, you know, I think the timing of these things is always interesting because very rarely is, you know, does something happen and immediately you get that kind of, you know, victims coming forward or immediate restitution of anything. So there are questions about, you know, why now? But I think even if those are true, the point is that he's getting taken out by whatever powers be and whoever decided this needed to happen now. You know, there's questions around any of these kinds of things around, you know, the Noem revelations around, you know, Rep Gonzalez. His revelations have been out for a long time, but he finally just resigned. So I think regardless.
Well, what he did was wrong, but I don't think rape was a part of anything that he's been accused of. He was in a consensual relationship that was not a relationship he should have been in.
Yeah, I mean, I think Swalwell's biggest concerns may not even be his role, you know, now that he does not have anymore in Congress or running for governor, it might be the law. So he's kind of in his own category. But politics is always part of this. You know, I think, like I said, I think the bottom line is that it's good it's coming out. Sure, would we like to see true transparency in the media the minute they know things, you know, those getting out. But there's a lot of decisions that have to be made before allegations like that can come forward in a media source.
Well, that's interesting because you would like to believe that if the media found out about something like this and then investigated it, which they could easily do, that they might come out with it. And if we do find out that a lot of people knew about this and looked the other way, that's shameful. That's just that's shameful. So we'll see.
Yeah, and it was rumored. You know, go ahead.
I of course don't traffic in all that stuff because I don't hang with those guys or anywhere near those people, men and women. And so I never heard them. I didn't know. And I just started hearing them when the media started doing it. And then you're right. It was like a groundswell that happened very quickly for people to have not known about it. Anyway, quick note. What's your gut feeling, Caitlin Buss, with TMZ launching a D.C. bureau? TMZ, which was not taken seriously a few years ago, has been taken very seriously the last several years.
Yeah, I think it's good. I think more sunlight on these political elected officials is good. And TMZ is very good at it. So I imagine they'll uncover a lot of hypocrisy, and that can only make our government better. If I was in D.C., I'd be I'd be very careful. They will have people trailing them.
Yeah, this is the way it's the story breaks. TMZ, the tabloid known for its sensational headlines and dirt digging on Hollywood celebrities and other famous people, is opening up shop in Washington, D.C. with an eye on covering Congress.
it's the new Hollywood, right? When I lived out there, it was Hollywood for ugly people is what they called it.
That's what they called Washington? Hollywood for every people.
Ugly people.
Okay. Well, yeah, TMZ is going to find that out very quickly, and we're going to hear more about it because they pull no punches. They absolutely pull no punches. All right. Well, have fun with your hubby, Kelly Cobb, this coming Tuesday when you sit in for me, and thank you again in advance for doing that.
All right, Paul. Great to be with you.
Caitlin Buss, Deputy Editorial Page Editor for the award-winning Detroit News. As we continue in Focus with Paul W. Smith on WJR. I mentioned this at the start of the week, a kind of a screwy scheduling situation because I am going to be traveling to see Sophie for her birthday. Mine's April 18th. She was born the next day. The whole story. I was 50. She was born the next day. And so April 19th, she's going to be 23, if you can believe that. There's still some of you here who remember when I played her heart in vitro or in utero or whatever they called it in before she was born, and can't believe it was over 23 years ago. But anyway, she'll be 23 on April 19th, and of course April 18th, I will still be 50. So I'm going to be in and out and in and out, but we've got some great people that are, again, sitting in for me, and I'll be back on the air Wednesday. So I'm looking forward to that. Anyway, I always look forward to a conversation with Jonathan Savage. He's our Fox News correspondent extraordinaire and WJR contributor. And these are wild times, Jonathan. Nice to have you on board with us. Good afternoon.
Hello. Good afternoon to you, and happy 50th when it comes again.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that very, very much. Thanks for listening while I'm rambling on before introducing you. I appreciate it. I know you're busy. These are crazy times. And amazingly, I think, is this the first time Israeli and Lebanese officials have actually sat down together to have direct talks on peace?
The first time since 1993. That is a very, very long time, and a lot has happened since then. The two countries don't have formal diplomatic relations, so getting them together in the same room happened yesterday, and it was historic. Secretary of State Marco Rubio said it was a historic opportunity to end Hezbollah influence in the region. Hezbollah, let's remind ourselves, is not an arm of the Lebanese state. If anything, it is an arm of Iran, but it is very influential in Lebanon. It has acted as a militia and as a political party. It has acted as to put it very mildly, a thorn in the side of Israel. Israel has several times tried to put an end to the Hezbollah threat once and for all. Hezbollah has come back and back. It had created an enormous arsenal of rockets and military installations, not to mention individuals making up a sort of army within Lebanon. And since the Operation Epic Fury started, Israel decided once again to try and end the Lebanese problem, the Hezbollah problem. Lebanon, I think there are many there who would like Hezbollah to go away as well. But it's more complex than that because Hezbollah does have some support within Lebanon, by no means everybody. So these talks yesterday were a start. They agreed that they wanted to reduce the influence of Hezbollah within Lebanon, and a statement put out by the State Department. So that was certainly a step forward. And I think that there will be a lot of pressure on Lebanon, put together by Israel and the United States, to go ahead and actually turn those commitments into actions.
I remind people, as Jonathan Savage has, that there are people in Lebanon who don't see Hezbollah as the militant terrorists that we know them to be, because when they're not fighting and bombing and doing all this stuff they do, they're helping the Lebanese people. They're the ones who make sure they have food. They're the ones that make sure they get to doctors or dentists or whatever. It's astonishing how complicated the issue is. But simply stated, they are terrorists and they need to stop. But my question, Jonathan Savage, is when I see that Israel and Lebanon are meeting, I'm thinking, yeah, but what's that got to do with Hezbollah? Because certainly Lebanon can't take on Hezbollah. Hezbollah has all the weaponry. The average or usual Lebanese people do not. So what do they hope to accomplish in these kinds of talks when it isn't? Israel will tell you they're not attacking Lebanon, they're attacking Hezbollah in Lebanon.
Yes, and there has been, we should remind ourselves, a lot of collateral damage. More than 2,000 people have died over the recent weeks as a result. And yeah, to follow up on your point there, look at what Hezbollah are saying in the aftermath of these Lebanon-Israel talks that took place in Washington. A member of Hezbollah's political council says, we are not bound by what they agreed to. In essence, they are saying, you can say whatever you want. We're going to do whatever we want. The Lebanese president, Joseph Aoun, said he hoped that the talks would mark the beginning of the end of the suffering of the Lebanese people in general and those in the south in particular. He says the only solution would be in the Lebanese armed forces being solely responsible for the security of the area. Again, that's a fine aspiration, but we wait to see how they're going to achieve that.
Yeah, that's a big question. And then you add in Iran claiming that the 2-week ceasefire that's got to be over soon was supposed to include no more bombing of Hezbollah in Lebanon. And then, of course, the United States says, no, what are you talking about? That has nothing to do with a ceasefire in Iran. And I don't know, did they ever get that worked out?
They didn't get it worked out. It looked for a while as though that dispute was going to derail the U.S. Iran talks that took place last weekend. In the end, they decided to agree to disagree because having those negotiations in Islamabad was considered more important. And that question has been swept under the carpet, I think, somewhat. And because, as we now know, President Trump is talking up the possibility of further talks between Iran and the United States taking place in the next few days. He says the war is very close to over. He has said this before, but there is momentum here. But it could be, there are sort of rumblings that Israel may declare a ceasefire against Hezbollah in order to push forward a deal to end the conflict with Iran. But, you know, with all these things, all these rumblings we get from behind the scenes, we have to believe them when we see it and not before.
I was just going to say, it's a tough job because the President Trump has said it before. He's saying it again. In this case, he's saying, watch for an amazing 2 days. I think this thing is almost over. You can't go to press with that sort of thing because he said it many times. So you're right. You have to wait to see it to believe it, as it turns out. I think Marco Rubio's stock remains high or seemingly growing. And I'm not sure the same can be said for Vice President J.D. Vance in his efforts. What do you think?
I think J.D. Vance is staking a lot on being the front man for these talks. Before Operation Epic Fury, it was Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner who were leading this. And now J.D. Vance is sort of, I've just got this image of him like pushing between them to get to the front of the queue and then standing behind him. He's been the person who's been leading these. And his stock could rise if they get an excellent deal out of this.
Right.
But if they don't, he may have an egg on his face a little bit, and Secretary Rubio might be the man to take over. Vice President Vance says there has been a ton of progress, but he does say that you're not going to solve the mistrust overnight. And I think the Iranians would say, well, whether it's J.D. Vance, Marco Rubio, Steve Witkoff, Jared Kushner, the nations involved remains the same.
Jonathan Savage, Fox News correspondent extraordinaire and our great WJR contributor. Thank you, my friend. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Paul. Take care.
You do the same, and be safe out there covering all that news as we continue in Focus with Paul W. Smith at 1244. Well, there are some things you can depend on, and you can depend on WJR letting you know when our partners are doing something good for the community, and this continues all the time with our partners at Buddy's Pizza. And this coming Monday, these creators of the original and most awarded Detroit-style pizza, which I love, will host their 50th annual Slice for Life fundraiser to support Capuchin Soup Kitchen, once again donating 20% of dine-in and carry-out sales from all locations statewide to its longest-standing charitable partner. We are thrilled to say hello and meet for the first time Juan Rojas, who is the new CEO of Buddy's Pizza. Juan, I look forward to meeting you in person and sharing some pizza with you.
Yes, sir, absolutely. Thanks for having me. Really happy to be here.
Well, we're happy to have you here. And, of course, our old friend, Brother Gary Wegner, the executive director of the Capuchin Soup Kitchen, which this radio station has been helpful to for a number of years as well. Brother Gary, God bless you. I hope things are going well.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Paul. And it's great to be talking to you and about this incredibly long relationship that we've had with Buddy's Pizza.
And tell me, in your own words, because you can do it far better than anyone else, how important this is that Buddy's continues to do this. How important it is that you get this money and how you put this money to good use.
Well, you know, I met Juan yesterday for the first time at the original Buddy's on Conant. Always good to meet people over pizza. And I was sharing with him, besides the finances, the money that it has made over the years, which I think is something like $4 million over the 50 years, that has obviously helped us to do an awful lot of good. It also helps us with people getting to know about the ministry. You can talk, you can advertise, and there's still people you don't reach till you reach them. And some people are reached by going to Buddy's.
Isn't that the truth? And I never really thought about the fact that they might be introduced to Capuchin Soup Kitchen for the very first time. It never even occurs to me, because, you know, we're immersed in this. But that's, you're right, many times there is no way to reach everybody, and this kind of helps you reach a lot more people.
It's really true. I spend, and a number of other friars, I spend pretty much the whole day going to different Buddy's and talking to people. And, you know, a lot of the people are there because they knew it's the Buddy's Slice for Life with the Capuchins, and that's why they go. And then there's people who, when I come up to them, they had no idea. They were just there for pizza.
Wow.
And
well,
I was able to talk to him about it.
And isn't that great that you travel around and understand that? I'm not surprised. You are Brother Gary Wegner, the executive director of the Capuchin Soup Kitchen, for a reason. And reaching the 50th year of Slice for Life is a truly remarkable testament to the compassion and generosity of Buddy's Pizza and, of course, the people of our community. Even when the new guy comes on board, and that's the new guy who's on the other end of our line right now, Buddy's Pizza's new CEO, Juan Rojas. And I want to get to know you a little bit. We aren't going to spend a lot of time on that. We'll do it another time. But I do want to know what some of your focus is going to be now as the new CEO, Juan.
Yes, sir. So, Paul, one of the things I just wanted to add, it's Monday the 27th is the Slice for Life event in our restaurants. So the 27th of April. The focus for us, first and foremost, is quality consistency of our product. you know, this brand has been here for 80 years. It was here before I was here, and it hopefully will be here long after I'm not. So the way I see it, the way we see it, is we're stewards of this great brand for as long as they'll have me and as long as we're able to add value. One of the things that we really talk about internally, especially over the last 2 weeks, is just the noble endeavor that is to feed people and what it means to people to come to a restaurant, sit as a family, and either, you know, bond, celebrate things like Mother's Day that's coming up. And it's just one of those noble endeavors that everyone needs. And it just sparks different feelings in people. And in that sense, very similar to what the folks over at the Capuchin Soup Kitchen are doing, Brother Gary, Brother Tim, that we met yesterday. And it's just so aligned. My favorite thing about it, Paul, is that this partnership came about from the team at 6 Mile 50 years ago, wanting to do something different. And it's lasted 50 years, 5 decades, uncounted amounts of people coming in and out, CEOs, owners. But this remains true. It remains true because it's important to us. It's important to the Capuchin Soup Kitchen, the Capuchin folks, and it's important to Detroit. So we're looking forward to continuing to do more of that. In the short term, especially, Paul, quality and consistency. We want people to be proud of the brand, and we want to take back our crown as the undisputed best Detroit-style pizza in the world.
Definitely. We look forward to further conversations. I know it didn't take you long, along with your wife, Brandy. It didn't take you long to figure out this is the kind of restaurant you can take your family, and when family comes into town, you can take them too for something that's very, very special. Don't forget, 50 years of Pizza with a Purpose coming up this Monday, April 27th. Buddy's Pizza's annual Slice for Life as we continue in focus on WJR. All right, hour number two on this Wednesday, April 15th. Yes, yes, income tax day, sinking of the Titanic, death of Abe Lincoln. I mean, the list goes on and on. I think you're right, Mike. We change tax day from the 15th. It's a snake-bitten date. But I don't know if anything like that's going to happen. But be that as it may, the team is here. Mike Parsons, our executive producer. Danielle Mason, the queen of the switches. And in for Rich Luzinski, the one and only Jason Fistler, as we work together as the team to bring you Relentless Positive Radio, which you can stream very easily any time of day or night from anywhere in the world at WJR.com. You can come back if you can't be here noon to 2 when we're here. Please do get the podcast. It takes very little time to listen to the whole thing on the podcast at WJR.com. And also, be sure you're carrying around the free WJR app. So, meanwhile, Facebook and YouTube pages are live streaming us right now. And Mike tells me that never goes away. We're here in between the great Kevin Dietz and Ryan Ermani. So you're tuned in and doing well if you're listening in. Somebody told me again, and you've told me this too, I've got to start to pay attention to Facebook. I've tried to avoid it. But somebody said to me, you kill on Facebook. And I go, I don't even know how to get on Facebook. No, every time you put something on your Paul W. Smitsta, your Instagram account, it goes into Facebook and way more people see it and react to it. And I went, oh my God, I had no idea.
Yeah. I'm guessing Sophie or someone probably helped you set up your Instagram.
I think,
or maybe it was Kim.
Before that, it could have, it could have been Ann.
Oh,
I don't know.
Okay.
Because the station,
yeah,
you know, years ago, before you were born, young man. Well, years ago, the station, the corporate people in Atlanta or New York or wherever I think they're on a ship somewhere and they are out there at sea. They said everyone's got to participate.
Yeah.
In Facebook, and I said, I'm so busy. Can't somebody just set me up? And I think they did.
Yeah. So that would make sense if it was Ann, actually, because whoever set you up, there's a setting where if you post on Instagram, it also posts on Facebook. And but you know, you have a legitimate concern. There's a lot more trolls on Facebook than Instagram, and I would say the overwhelming majority of the comments on your Facebook are positive, but of course there's a troll or two in there.
Yeah. Well, that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
There are so many seemingly very sad people who have what appear to be miserable lives.
Right.
And I feel sorry for them. Life is short, man. It's And it can be great. And it, frankly, it can be what you make it. And it's never too late to live the life you always wanted to live. It's not too late, no matter what your age is. People are out there now making each and every day count because they know each day is a gift. And what we don't know is how much QTR we have, quality time remaining. We just don't know. So we have to make sure that we handle that. A question that came up, why is Michigan seeing so many tornado chances this early in the season? Has anyone answered that question?
No, but we should get somebody on once you're back and talk to him, either Scott Larimore or see what Paul Gross is doing, because I was thinking the same thing. What is it? It's mid-April, and I've already gotten two tornado alerts on my phone.
Yeah, it's scary. It's happening much earlier than it usually is. It's like late, it's acting like it's late spring, early summer.
Right. And
and it isn't.
And it's always kind of a bummer when it's a sunny, warm day lately, because it feels like after the sunny, warm day, we're going to run into some bad weather instead of just having nice weather for an extended period of time.
Yeah. Well, we're I see a couple of quick notes. Ex-Michigan coach Sherrone Moore sentenced to 18 months probation. That was covered so hot and so wrong in the beginning. There was so much swirling out there that wasn't true. That's probably what he should be getting. All those people are saying, hey, he should have gone to jail. Well, not after you heard most of the information that most people didn't listen to.
Yeah, most legal minds said that they didn't see him facing jail time because he threatened himself. He didn't threaten the woman who he was in an affair with.
Yeah, it's a horrible situation. In every way. And there's more and more of this stuff in sports. There's some big deal. I don't follow her at all, but some big deal New York Times sports reporter.
Yeah, Diana Rossini, who was on ESPN for a long time. Her and Mike Vrabel were photographed at some kind of resort, and they looked very chummy. It looked like they were spending time with each other and, getting very
hands
close. Yeah.
And both are married.
Right.
And details.
Yeah, and it seems
now she's resigned from what I would guess was a pretty good job.
Yeah, and I mean, she probably saw the writing on the wall. If she didn't resign, she'd be let go. I guess her contract was up in June, but it takes two to tango, and it feels like the overwhelming majority of the backlash was aimed at her, where they were both, stepping out on their spouses.
Yeah. Very sad, very unfortunate. I'm not a Starbucks person. I liked the concept of Starbucks, and they treated their people well. I don't know. But here's the headline. Starbucks has launched a beta app in ChatGPT to provide inspiration for customers' drink orders. Any idea with that? I stay away. You know what? When I learned the other day that, like, I think it's like $27 a day if you spend $27 a day on stuff like that, that's $10,000 a year. And if you, starting in your 20s, put that $27 a day in an investment account, VTI, all those things, I don't know, those different little simple accounts.
Yeah.
It works out to be $4 million when you're 65. I wish somebody in God's great earth would have told me that
when
I was mowing lawns and making money.
If you're spending $27 on Starbucks a day, you've got bigger money problems. But
I think that's what it was. I think that's the figure.
Yeah.
$27 a day to equal $10,000. I could be wrong, but I thought that.
But
what
yeah,
it was.
I could see you go to Starbucks, you go out to lunch, you get something on the way home. That could equal $27. But
yeah,
I feel like most people know their Starbucks order. I mean, I can understand if you want Starbucks, but you don't know what you want, you ask ChatGPT. But I feel like when people go to Starbucks, they know exactly what they want, and it's always very specific.
Yeah, if you're running out of ideas on what to order at Starbucks that you would have to rely on AI, that's a good indication it's time to start saving money.
Yeah, you don't need Starbucks that day if you don't know exactly what you want.
It's crazy. I mean, it's crazy. I don't know how else to put it. Well, the president has now the president has now announced that diet soda, we call it pop, probably kills cancer.
Diet Pop kills cancer?
That it kills cancer. And I'm here to tell you, I was one of the first people on the radio or anywhere many years ago that said Diet Pop kills people.
Right.
That Diet Pop is worse for you than regular pop.
Yeah. Why is he saying just because he likes Diet Coke and he thinks he can rewrite the rules?
He has a button on his desk. He presses it to great fanfare, and they bring him in a quick Diet Coke. He says he believes that diet soda has anti-cancer properties because, quote, it kills grass. So does dog pee. I hope he doesn't start telling us to start taking dog urine, for God's sake.
Wait, if something is killing grass, that's probably a good sign to stop drinking it.
Well, he says that it probably then, therefore, it leads to, if it kills grass, it must also kill cancer cells.
Hey, knock yourself out, but that sounds... people can just say anything nowadays, even if...
Here's the question. Isn't he busy enough being president of the United States and running these wars and all this other stuff than to worry about making medical pronouncements?
Yeah. And just because you say it doesn't mean it's true.
Well, of course, present company excluded from that. I mean, if we say it, it's true.
Right. Except for Paul, just because you say it doesn't mean it's true.
What about you, Danielle?
No comment.
Okay, good. She's wise. She could run for office and be in there, and that's probably what most of them should say most of the time. No comment. Watch how I vote and what I do. Don't listen to what I say. All right, we're underway on this middle of the week, Wednesday, April 15th, 2026, with Relentless Positive Radio as you are on your way to making each and every day count. Each day is a gift. And remember, be mindful of the QTR as we continue in focus. Well, we have the first of a few takes on the weather, not just up in Sheboygan where we've been on a dam watch, but down here where we've had tornadoes and tornado watches and warnings and all the rest of it. It's been bizarre weather, that's for sure. Covering it all as a reporter at the Great Detroit News, Beth LeBlanc is here with the latest on the Sheboygan Dam Watch. Beth, nice to have you back. Good afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
Talk to us. Where are we right now?
Yeah, so as of this morning, the water was about 6.5 inches from the top of the dam. This is in spite of many interventions that the state has been trying to make at that dam complex. They've put in multiple pumps to pump water out and around the dam. They've taken the gates off the spillways to allow as much flow as possible. They've also built up one side of the dam with sandbags and an aquadam. And the reason they're doing that is because northwest of the dam, between the actual dam structure and the lock, is a grassy slope that the DNR is really worried about, because if water spills that way onto the grassy slope, there's a possibility of erosion. And if that area erodes, it kind of compromises the structure of the dam itself. So what they're trying to do is push as much as possible any kind of breach to the southeast side of the dam, where there's a rocky slope and where erosion is less likely. So they're working to do that. They're also working to restart a hydroelectric unit at the dam that has been idled basically since 2023. But when it was working, that hydroelectric portion of the dam accounted for 30% of the capacity, 30% of the water that went through the dam went through there. So they're at a disadvantage with that being idled, and so they're trying to get it restarted right now.
Yeah, what I had read early on, Beth LeBlanc with us from the Detroit News, might have been in one of your columns, in fact, Beth. One of the stories was they were going to fire up that hydroelectric powerhouse, if you will, and get it running. Did they know up front that it was not just an easy throw the switch and let it go, that there's quite a bit of work that's going to go into this thing to get it back up and running?
Yeah, this is a very complicated process. And usually when a dam produces hydroelectric power, it's federally regulated. So this is the state working with the feds, working with locals, working with the private owner to try to get it restarted. And what they have to do is, A, they have to basically bring it out in mothballs, but also they have to reconnect it to the grid, basically, because they cannot operated at its full capacity unless it's backing up into a grid. And so Consumers Energy has been trying to get it connected for a while here. They brought in about 1,000 feet of 6-inch cable up from another Midwest state to try and reconnect this. But it is definitely easier said than done at this point.
Yeah, I mean, in a sense, not even in a sense, in reality, they're getting this thing out of the mothball stage. And we all know what something is like and what happens to it when it hasn't been run for a while. There are a lot of technical issues and difficulties and parts that need to be replaced and parts that are not ready at hand. So I guess they're probably working on that as well, Beth.
Yeah, they are, definitely. And, you know, complicating all of this are other areas. You know, the state's focus has primarily been on the Sheboygan Dam, as it should be, right? That's one of the key pieces here. But there are other areas in the Sheboygan County that are flooding right now. So, like, northwest of this main dam, five earthen dams have been encountering problems. One of the levees broke last afternoon and has been flooding homes in that area. Upstream of the dam, a lot of the lakes that feed into the Sheboygan River, like Mullet Lake, Black Lake, Burt Lake, those are all rising. They're flooding homes around those lakes where you see a lot of vacation homes. So some folks aren't even home as this is occurring. Other folks are there year round and are seeing it occurring, at, you know, kind of as we speak. And that's all water that needs to pass through this dam, but has so far been unable to. The DNR is fully aware of what's building up behind this dam. They're hoping to channel it as responsibly as possible. And if there is a breach, they're trying to do the least amount of damage as possible to get it around the dam.
Beth LeBlanc, a reporter for the Detroit News, you've been spending time in Sheboygan. How are the folks doing?
You know, I think a lot of them are kind of at a wait and see stage. They're obviously nervous about this, but they have been getting some regular updates from the state and city, probably not as many as they would wish. But, you know, if you go to downtown Sheboygan, which is the main street in Sheboygan is in the potential floodplain here, you see a lot of stores closed with sandbags in front of them. So people are definitely preparing there.
Well, we've got our fingers crossed. We have our thoughts, and those who pray and believe in it are praying for them to come through this on the upside and bright side and better side. And we'll depend on you, Beth, for your reports. And I thank you again for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Uh-huh. Beth LeBlanc, reporter at the award-winning Detroit News, the latest on the Sheboygan Dam Watch. And the Detroit News has her right there in Sheboygan, which is what we always expected of our newspapers. And not every newspaper does that anymore, but the Detroit News obviously is and does. We continue in Focus with Paul W. Smith right here on WJR with more weather information. And we don't have to go up to Sheboygan for it. We've got it right in Metro Detroit last night. Marie Osborne on the story next. You didn't have to be up in Sheboygan to have weather concerns, in their case, flooding concerns. We had plenty of it around here. Severe weather rolled through the metro area in the early hours of this morning, leaving behind a trail of downed trees. I was up at like 3 o'clock in the morning following this on my phone. There really has been a trail of downed trees, power lines, damaged buildings. And WJR's Marie Osborne reporting, along with the storm damage, the danger of flooding persists. We got our hands full, Marie. Good afternoon.
Indeed. And if I just was going to just say, we really do have our hands full because I just lost power here at the studio. My screens just went blank. But okay, I think we're back. All right. So thousands of people, just like you, Paul, were awakened in the middle of the night by all these tornado warnings that went off. In Melvindale, several buildings sustained heavy damage in the high winds, causing downed trees and power lines. In the area of Dix Highway and Outer Drive, a little strip mall there, a couple of businesses, the tops of those buildings were ripped off and caused a lot of damage there. Same story in Ann Arbor, where some University of Michigan students were awakened by emergency alarms on their phones. They had to take shelter. The Yost Arena also lost part of its, or was damaged by heavy winds. And cleanup is, of course, already underway. And we're still expecting more storms today. So according to the latest numbers on the DTE outage map, there's about 19,000 people without power. They're scattered all over the metro area. Most of them, though, are in that Ann Arbor area. There's large areas of outages in Washtenaw County and southern Wayne County. Now, about the flood issue here in the metro area, a flood watch has been issued by the National Weather Service until 2 a.m. Friday, April 17th. In the last 10 days, most of southeast Michigan has seen 1.5 to, get this, 4.5 inches of rainfall. It's saturated soil before the main spring green-up. So we have gotten a lot of rain in this area. Several rounds of thunderstorms are expected tonight in through tomorrow, and an additional 1 to 2 inches of rain could be coming our way. So a lot of the roadways that were flooded this morning, still going to be a problem tomorrow. We're only more roadways are expected to be having that issue. So do be careful on your driving in the next couple of days.
Good golly, Miss Molly. Does anyone ever say that anymore? Anyway, yeah. Good golly. It's not just our imagination. This weather is hitting us earlier than we usually expect to see.
Yes, I heard this too, that spring has come earlier because we just had this warm spate of weather here. So yeah, it's come earlier than it usually has by several days, if not a week or so. I noticed the trees in our neighborhood, they're beautiful, but they're all budding out. And I thought, geez, that's a little early, but nonetheless, here we are.
And as you pointed out, and you'll be keeping track of it for us always, Marie Osborne, more severe weather is, in fact, possible tomorrow. But the risk is like, on a scale of 1 to 5, 1. It's
yeah,
much less.
Yeah, less.
Thank goodness. But we, yep, you know, they want to at least let people know it's a possibility. A heads up. Keep your eyes and ears open. Keep tuned in to WJR. And get one of those weather radios, too, if you need to. But we try to keep you on top of that stuff. Thank you, Marie.
Thank you.
Marie Osborne, WJR's Director of Community Affairs and News. With the powerful storms causing a number of tornado warnings in Metro Detroit last night. How about that? Yost Ice Arena losing part of its roof. Multiple trees down and a vehicle flipped on its side. And as she pointed out, lots of reports of damage coming from the Ann Arbor area. Well, Ann Arbor all the way through downriver. We continue in Focus with Paul W. Smith on WJR. Well, a story that has captured a lot of people's attention without any question at all is the wife who has disappeared in the Bahamas. The husband was arrested for as long as they could arrest him without charging him. He's from Lenawee County. Or wait a minute, she's from Lenawee County. Well, whatever, they have a Michigan connection. Brian Hooker of Onsted saying yesterday, I think, telling CBS News that he wants to believe his wife is still alive. We have no knowledge of what happened. We have no knowledge if she's still alive or not. But plenty of people have opinions. So we call upon our retired Detroit Police Assistant Chief to give us his gut feeling on this story. You know who I'm talking about, the one and only Steve Dolent, who is not afraid to speak his mind and give an opinion. It's why we have you on, Steve. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Do you see this guy?
I've seen pictures of this guy. I've seen pictures with his wife. Yes, I've seen this guy.
But I'm seeing he walks out of jail. He looks very calm, very confident, unscathed. Like, yeah, I'm going to try to find my wife. Okay, you're an idiot. You're not going to find her after these many days alive. His whole story, I'm not a boat guy. I'll be the first to admit it. But most dinghies don't have an electric start. They have a pull motor. And yet he's saying, the key came out, was around her wrist, and she fell overboard. in shallow water, mind you, in high winds and high waves, excessive winds and high waves. If you're an experienced boater, would you go out? Hell, if you're not an experienced boater, would you go out in excessive winds and high, you know, high waves? No. But he did.
And let me tell you something. Hey, listen, I'm not an experienced boater. I've owned boats in the past, thanks to Pete Beauregard at Colony Marine. Let me just say this. Let me get this off. I would never. I mean, if this guy can afford, he and his wife can afford that sailing vessel, pretty good size. Right. What the hell are they doing in an 8-foot blow-up rubber dinghy that they both almost didn't fit on?
Well, they're going to have a drink and celebrate their marriage.
Yeah, but you can have a nice, safe, small little boat that many sailors put at the back of their vessel.
Yes. Okay. Do most of them don't have the pull motor, right? They don't have the electric ignition. The little ones in the back, as far as I know. The big ones have the man overboard button that you can press, and the GPS will tell you where they went over. This guy says, I threw out a life jacket. I'm not sure she got it. And then get your ass in the water. It's supposed to be shallow. Jump in and try to save her. Well, you know, it's pretty windy out there. I had to paddle in at 2 o'clock in the morning, whatever. I'm sorry. And he looks so calm. Like, yeah, well, I love her. I'm curious if he has an insurance policy on her. There's a lot of things I'm curious about. When they find the body, if
you, without question, you, like so many people, have. Mm. But yours is a learned gut reaction. Your learned gut reaction is this guy did something.
Oh, yeah. And he hasn't exactly, he says he has pinpointed where she was at. Was she there? Because when they find the body, because I don't think she's alive, you're going to be checking to see if she was strangled. Did she, is there water in her lungs? Did she die before she went in the water or after? Did she really drown? Are there, you know, bruises, abrasions? There's so many things you want to ask. The toxicology reports. And he just kind of walks out and says, yeah, well, you know, I'm looking for her. I love her.
Didn't help to have her daughter in this apparently mixed marriage, that her daughter doesn't trust him and brought up that they didn't get along well and they drank a lot. And when they drank a lot, they fought a lot. This is not helpful information. Well, no, it's helpful information in the investigation. It doesn't help exonerate him very well.
No, and by the time he got back to the shore and did whatever, his alcohol content was probably lower than it was because he did have to paddle till 4 o'clock in the morning.
Supposedly.
Hours and hours. And, okay, so that's the high waves, excessive wind, and you're drunk. That was a good idea to get in a boat with your wife and try to get back. Come on. And then, again, he walks out like, yeah, well, everything's good. Because down there, they don't have Miranda. They have Queensrÿche. It's a British colony, right? You don't want to be in a Jamaican prison. And this guy just, the Coast Guard can't find him. Bahamian police can't find him. No one can find this woman. And this guy walks out unscathed.
I'm confused. Is it because it's Bahamian law? But Steve Dolan, retired Detroit Police Assistant Chief, there certainly have been times when there was no body and they've still convicted somebody of murder.
Absolutely.
It's like they're saying no body, no crime.
Yet. But see, he didn't have his passport yet, I don't think. I don't think I was talking to another attorney who said, just because they release you, you're still stuck there. You're not going anywhere. Because you're going to do, it again, different.
Well, he says he doesn't want to go anywhere because he wants to continue the search. Well, we'll see how it all goes. You're kind of reacting the way I thought you would, Steve. Thanks for being with us.
Figured that. Okay, have a good one. Take care.
You too. Steve Dolan, retired Detroit Police Assistant Chief. Coming up, it's JR Afternoon, the one and only Ryan Ermani. I see you online and YouTube and all over the place. You're a busy boy, Ryan.
I'm trying. Why not stay busy while the people still maybe want to hear from me or see me one day? You never know.
I'm hoping that's going to be for a long time.
Hopefully. You and me both, Paul.
I've been plugging away nearly 60 years doing this.
You're
just a young pup, for God's sake.
Well, you're a Hall of Famer.
You've got plenty of time. I'm sure you've got a great show.
That's what separates you. Well, I keep
stand by for news, and I'll see you in a few days. Regards, Paul W. Smith.